Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me for the third quarter equity review. We're going to have three parts tonight. The first is overarching comments. Then we're going to review the charts. Check the link now on your commentary on the website, and in the subscriber resource area, there's a link, and it will take you to the at the top. It says the Solari Report third quarter 2015 equity overview, and it's all the charts, and I'm going to need you to follow with me as I go through the charts. And then finally, we're going to do some quick comments, look ahead to the fourth quarter. Okay, overarching comments. There's a lot to talk about. First, I can't say that we haven't gotten our correction anymore. For 2 years, I've been saying we're way overdue for a 10 to 25% correction. And sure enough, we got at least 10% off the high in the U.S. Of course, Germany and China, the strongest markets of the year, got off more, 20 to 35% down from their highs. And so we've had our correction. And of course, the question for all of us, is it over? I think not in the U.S. because we have earning announcements to struggle through over the next month. So I think we're much of the way through, but we have a little bit more to go. Restoring the balance. I also put up in the subscriber links a link to a commentary I did a few months ago. It has a video from Once Upon a Time in Mexico where Johnny Depp, who plays an intelligence agency agent, talks about how anything that's excellent must be killed so that we'll restore the balance. Basically, keeping poor countries poor is sort of the message. But we saw a lot of economic warfare, and it really did look this in the third quarter as though the economic warfare was designed to bring down any market that was doing better than the S&P. It really did look like restoring the balance. But my third point is that there are limits to economic warfare. When we saw the Chinese market come down, it really boomeranged back into the S&P, a reminder that the two economies are really tied at the hip. And when they fight, they can really bring down the global economy. So there's incredible incentive to keep cooperating. And I think there was a little bit of a reminder coming as the S&P turned down probably more powerfully than the managers expected. Wouldn't surprise me if that's part of the reason Yellen decided not to take up interest rates, because the tide at the hip is clearly stronger than we all like to necessarily realize. Incubation. I was struck when I was in Switzerland and Germany how much more strong the support is for their small business and how much richer the small business community and strength is. And I think that's important because one of the most important ingredients to a healthy stock market is to have great companies. And to have great companies, you've got to not only breed up companies out of startups and small business, but you've got to breed up a whole world of managers and entrepreneurs. And in fact, if you look at the base in the United States, it's really been a war on small businesses. We tried to consolidate market share into the big businesses. Now, the idea being big businesses become more competitive globally if they have that base. But the reality is, with some exception like Silicon Valley, it's really been a war on small business. And I don't think that creates a healthy base. And I'm reminded of the importance of creating that kind of base as I travel around. Next point is commodities plunge. The commodities have continued to plunge, as you'll see as we go through the charts. Now, to some consumers and some companies, that's an advantage because commodities is an important expense item. It's part of the line items in the expense area. But the reality is, if you look at how that's hit commodities producers, both companies and countries, particularly in the emerging markets and states in the United States, they're leveraged. They have both operating overhead, operating leverage and financial leverage, and it's starting to bite. It's one of the reasons we've seen a real spiral down in the junk market over the last 30 to 60 days. There's real trouble now with the commodities producers not being able to to make their debt service or make their debt payments. And that's got to translate through the market. So I think we're all wondering to what extent that's going to have an impact. But it's been quite a plunge, and it's surprised a lot of the insiders. A bigger global comment. I want to talk a little bit about the Pope's big presentation on climate change and the announcement thereafter by the Chinese that they would implement their cap and trade system by 2017. If you look at the different systems that we can use to govern our resources as a society, we can optimize them through markets. If you use markets correctly, including equity markets will signal all sorts of incentives to conserve resources and protect resources. It was one of the reasons I worked so hard in the 90s on basically facilitating place-based equity markets, because that really allows you to optimize with markets. If you look at a cap-and-trade system, it's a much more top-down command and control system, and it's a much more negative vision of how to allocate resources and to encourage society to preserve and protect environmental resources. And you literally are watching a competition growing between two systems. One, of course, is the equity markets, and it's a corporate vision. As I described in the first in our annual wrap-up, it's now grown to about $70 trillion globally. But what we've been hearing proposed for climate change is the theory, is a cap-and-trade system which, if allowed to really blossom, could be a much more frightening way of allocating resources for all the problems that any of us might have with the corporate vision of the world and the related corruption. It's nothing compared to what we could see with a cap and trade system globally. Think of it almost as, you know, the Starbucks vision versus the Pope and cap and trade. But beware the incentive systems that you affirm and support. The whatever climate change is used to justify in the way of systems like cap and trade, they're going to be made to sound very good, you know, end poverty, blah, 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 blah. And in fact, it's not that at all. It's a much darker vision, one we need to spend more time talking about on this Leary report so that I can make sure you understand it. But I think what we're going to see over the next year is more of an emergence of conversation about are we going to optimize through equity systems, or are we going to optimize through a global taxation system which is justified by climate change? Okay, let's take a look and go through the charts. If you could just turn to the link again that's in your subscriber resources. And forgive me, I've got the sounds of Amsterdam. I'm right over the canal, so sometimes the boats honk. So if you hear the sounds of Amsterdam in the background, that's what that is. Okay, first chart is an overview of all the different markets. And as you can see, you know, it almost looks like somebody put a pin in the balloon and everything just shrunk. You see basically almost everything down across the board, with the exception of the aggregate bond. We even had the long treasury down. But it was clearly a very deflationary kind of environment. So equity markets down, most bonds down, and commodities down, sort of down, down, down. I think one of our themes this 1 week this year was all fall down. One of the few things that didn't, let's just go down to the second chart. One of the things that didn't fall down was the dollar. Up 12% last year, it's now up 6.5% for the year. But you could see it was up 10% as of March. And I think one of the things that happened was the higher the dollar went, the more U.S. companies, both exporters and companies that had to consolidate earnings back into the United States, got hurt. And there's tremendous pressure from the corporations not to let the dollar run too high. I was really concerned that if the Fed raised interest rates, that we would see the dollar really skyrocket above 100, which is where it hit when it hit that 10%. But that didn't happen. And so now the market has raised interest rates a little bit, and that supported the dollar, which had fallen back down to about 3% up for the year. But let's see what happens when the Fed, if the Fed does raise interest rates by the end of the year, which I expect is likely, we could see the dollar go higher, but still a strong dollar scenario for now. If you go down to the next chart, basically this just breaks the S&P down between the small caps, mid caps, large caps, as well as the stocks doing buyback. And what it says is they all traded down together. Not too much divergence between the different groups. And then the next chart breaks down sectors. These are the Morningstar sectors for different parts of the S&P 500. Again, we're still in the U.S. market. And what you can see is the only market, if you look at the first two columns for S&P 500, the only market that's been positive this year is discretionary consumer spending. Consumer staples is flat. So if you want to think of it grossly oversimplified, consumer discretionary is luxury goods and consumer staples is essential goods. So consumer staples is Costco and consumer discretionary is Ralph Lauren. So what you can see is consumer discretionary was the only one that was up and consumer staples relatively flat, down less than 1%. And so essentially the U.S. consumer is still carrying the load. Surprise, surprise. The next chart shows biotech. As you can see, biotech has had quite a correction. And if anything is now an opportunity, it's down tremendously from where it was in the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter. Star performer in the equity markets for the last couple of years has been healthcare. We've tracked on the website as well as in the equity overviews the extent to which every time the Supreme Court affirms Obamacare, you know, the healthcare guys just go higher and higher. But finally, they traded off, correcting with the market, and so they're down so far this year. Motif Investing is a brokerage firm that organizes and creates ETFs around different sort of motifs. And the idea being that you can, instead of investing in single stocks, you can invest in baskets of sort of trends. And if you look at, you know, there's an old saying that there's a bull market someplace. So I always like to look at what's been up for the last year at Motif Investing. When you go to their website, you can look at what's had the best performance for the last month or the last year. You can't do year to date. So if you look at the last year, it's quite depressing. The number one performer is bear market. That's anybody who bets on the markets going down. Then we have entertainment. So it's online gambling and sports are up. Renter Nation. So all of us who can't afford a home can and have to rent. That's what's driving the rent up. And used car tune-ups is up. And then funerals and cybersecurity, so hacking and death are doing well. And if you keep going, caffeine fix. Part of it was the coffee was way down, so the coffee makers had good margins, but we're all drinking more coffee to try and make our rent and pay our online gambling bills. So anyway, but that's what was strong, and it's clearly not a broad sector of the economy. The next chart shows U.S. home construction. The home builders has been one of the strongest areas in the U.S. market, but then traded off with everybody else in the third quarter. So they're down slightly for the year, but I still expect coming into the 2016 election for the home building sector to do reasonably well. And then real estate had traded off in anticipation of higher interest rates, but has come back a little bit since then. Still down for the year. Crude oil, of course, it's just not a, you know, if you thought last year was ugly, this year was really ugly. The following chart shows Russia in comparison with oil, and surprisingly for me, Russia, which had been down tremendously last year, has had a reasonably good year this year. And then we show the German correction in the next chart. The DAX is the top 30 stocks in the German market. And that has come down tremendously, a much bigger correction than the U.S. markets. Ditto with China. And both of those charts, I'm comparing them to the S&P. And what you can see is the S&P, which had run up a lot in the last 2 years, was relatively flat this year. And so when it corrected, it corrected from not a very high place, but China and Germany had run up a lot and they corrected down. Same with India. Emerging markets, what you can see is they'd been up a little bit for the year, but have really come down tremendously. And then finally, the last below emerging markets, we're looking at the developed markets. That's essentially the G7 minus North America, minus Canada and United States. And had been stronger than the S&P for most of the year, but is now sort of matching them. And of course, the frontier markets are had a very poor year. Then fixed income, as I said, the longer-term treasury is down, but the bond aggregate ETF, AGG, is up about 1% for the year. That includes their dividend. So, yes, it didn't go down, but nothing to write home about. It's not very attractive at this point to stay in fixed income. We're all waiting for the big turn in the fixed income markets, and that I think the writing's on the wall, but it's not as though the big turn came because the Fed didn't raise interest rates. I think the market is slowly raising interest rates, but so clearly the turn is on, but I don't think we've begun to see anywhere near the big kind of shifts we're going to see over the next 5 years. Finally, gold and silver have continued down, have not performed well. And they've had a couple of good trading days for the last couple days. But again, my concern is that we could still see another big step down before this is over. Of course, we'll have to see what happens with the, if the dollar starts to weaken. And then finally, here's the commodities, the CRB, the Jefferies Commodities Index. And you can see down 16% for the year. At one point, it was down almost 20% for the year in August when we saw that August 24th dip. That was such really the worst day in the markets so far this year and certainly in the third quarter. But as I said, commodities continue to plunge. And just to help you see how ugly it is, I put up the year-to-date performance from FinViz on the futures. And you can see almost every category is in the red, with oats being down 35%. So oats is not the place to be. And finally, the Baltic Dry Index, which had started to sort of perk up after the summer or in coming into August, but has dropped back again. But it's still, doing certainly better than we were doing in the spring. And that's the review of the charts. And as I said, it's real easy to see if you flip back and look at the first chart, which is pretty much everything was down. Cash was the place to be. Cash was the place to be. Okay, so that's it for the charts. Let's talk about what's coming up. I think we've got some, for those of us who've been waiting for a 10 to 25% correction, I'm pretty excited about opportunities. And I think, though, this is an environment we have to be very careful. And so if you look at opportunities, what's attractive to me is any really high quality Northern European or U.S. company that's got a strong dividend, and I am confident can keep that dividend going over the next couple of years. So I'm particularly interested in the European markets because I think they're going to come out of correction a little bit ahead of the American. And of course, there's a possibility that the ECB may do another extend their QE beyond what they've said. So we'll see if that happens. But I'm nibbling on really high quality Swiss and German stocks at, with a 5 or 4.5% yield or better. Looking for 5, but you don't always get it. It's important to remember when you buy individual stocks that we're going to have to live with the Volkswagen program. One of the most shocking events in the third quarter was what happened with Volkswagen. We're now seeing blue chip stocks get hit with earnings problems, economic warfare, whistleblowing of the kind that happened to Volkswagen, and just shocking, sudden, unexpected drops in equity valuations. If you don't want to live with that kind of risk, you need to be able to live through it and just hold your way through. If you're not prepared to do it, it's going to be really important to stick to keep your investments in broadly diversified funds. I would say away from very high quality companies in the strong G7 countries. You know, everything else is pretty spotty. The emerging markets, we still have lots of dark clouds to deal with. In the commodities markets, there's still debt problems to slug through, and anything could happen. Now, I have to say, when commodities bottom, and I don't know when that's going to be, we're certainly going to be watching it. It's going to be an incredible opportunity. But we have certainly not proved a bottom yet. And so that's one of the things I'm going to be watching for. I think the biggest story to keep in mind is something that I put a post up on the website today. It's a republication of a summary of a special report from The Economist this week. And it's very important for you to read it, because we are now the unraveling that is happening of the Bretton Woods and dollar-based system is accelerating. And there's no doubt about that the limits of U.S. power are seen everywhere around the globe these days. And, of course, it's throughout the headlines. If you go through top picks, you see it reverberate again and again. The Economist, the title of The Economist article is Dominant and Dangerous, an American, as Americans' economy, economic supremacy fades, the primacy of the dollar looks unsustainable. So this is very big for The Economist to basically be announcing on the cover page that the U.S. dollar's hegemony is over. Let me just read a little bit from the article. If hegemons are good for anything, it is for conferring stability on the systems they dominate. For 70 years, the dollar has been the superpower of the financial and monetary system. Despite talk of the yuan's rise, the primacy of the greenback is unchallenged. As a means of payment, a store of value, and a reserve asset, nothing can touch it. Yet the dollar's rule has brittle foundations, and the system it underpins is unstable. Worse, the alternative reserve currencies are flawed. A transition to a more secure order will be devilishly hard. That's the opening paragraph. Let me just read the closing one. Compare that with contenders for reserve status. The euro is a currency whose very existence cannot be taken for granted. Only when the euro era has agreed on a full banking union and joint bond issuance will those doubts be fully laid to rest. As for the yuan, China's government has created the monetary equivalent of an 8-lane motorway, a vast network of currency swaps with foreign central banks, but there is no one on it. Until China opens its financial markets, the yuan will only be a bid player, and until it embraces the rule of law, no investor will see its currency as truly safe. All this suggests that the global monetary and financial system will not smoothly or quickly wean itself off the greenback. There are things America can do to shoulder more responsibility, for instance, by setting up bigger emergency swap lines with more central banks. More likely is a splintering of the system as other countries choose to insulate themselves from Fed decisions by embracing capital controls. The dollar has no peers, but the system that it anchors is cracking. Now, this is pretty big, and it reminds me, remember The Economist coming out of London, what I talked about when I reviewed the Warwicker trilogy, and that is as the player who played the Tony Blair character in the Warwicker trilogy said, don't you know the establishment always wins? Yes, the establishment always wins, but it does change its mind. And what we're watching, and I suspect it's very much coming out of the City of London, is the U.S. has lost its backing in the City of London. The whatever is going to happen now in terms of evolving global governance and global currency, it's not going to evolve straight out of the dollar. And in fact, this just follows on a lot of the things we've seen coming out of the global governance system, whether it's Snowden, Putin, you know, it looks to me like Putin has backing from the City of London, and that's part of how he's doing what he's doing. If I were a betting person, I would say that when this is all said and done, whatever happens with the global currency, when it's all said and done, the City of London and the crown is going to come out on top. But this is not good for the news for the Americans. It's not good news for the dollar. You know, the bell has just been rung and said the dollar hegemony is now going to, you know, this is the beginning of the end, is my interpretation. Now, if you listen to the pro-America discussion and strategy, you know, the Americans clearly think they have a lot more strength and a lot more decades to go. But I don't know. It's to me, this is a very important important bell that's being rung. And what it means to you and me is that whatever the equity markets are going to be over the next 10 or 20 years, they're going to be global. And so we've seen a few years when the U.S. Equity markets clearly outperformed all the markets globally, but and the dollar is very, very strong. But there's going to come a time when the dollar peaks, and that's whether it's commodities or precious metals or emerging market equities, that's going to be an opportunity to make sure you're broadly diversified globally, because whatever we're going into, it's a multipolar world and it's a global world. And frankly, it's a world where I hope the equity markets are a lot more successful than the Pope's cap and trade nightmare. Anyway, we're going to be talking a lot about equity for the next couple of weeks, because coming up next week, we have Rambus, who's been doing charting on the dollar, the S&P, and gold in response to my questions. Rambus had finally agreed he'd do an interview last month, and then as soon as he agreed, his site got hacked. So now what he's asked to do is to do it in written form, and he's been working on it for the last week, and we'll work on it for the next week. We'll publish it next week, and then I'll do an audio discussing it. But incredible charting. And of course, if you're trying to answer the very important questions about what's happening, to me, the dollar and the S&P and gold are three of the most important indicators to watch. So I'm very pleased about that. And then the wrap up will be our third quarter wrap up will be the week following October 22nd. And our big theme is going to be the Chinese stock markets. There is no way the global economy succeeds without the Chinese also succeeding. That's the question. How can we succeed with them? Something, as I said, a question that became more and more underscored during the third quarter. But I want to talk a lot about the Chinese equity markets. Where are they and why are they so important? And so that'll be our big theme for the third quarter. So I look forward to doing that with you. So until we're back with the fourth quarter equity overview, I wish you all good hunting.